radio thunderstorms causing some flooding problems in southern Arizona near Miller Canyon. Also concerns about the Wallow Fire area in eastern Arizona.
We have a flash flood warning out for basically portions of the Wallow Burn area from about Alpine through Nutrioso.
Supporters of increased border security can help Arizona build its own border fence, a new website up and running, buildthefence.com.
Frankly, we have to pick up and do the job that the federal government has not and will not do. And that's why we had to start this.
Phoenix police looking for suspect, 78-year-old man found dead in a city park.
To have a person like this, a 78-year-old man in our community, to think that he could be killed in a park at night is just unacceptable.
Phoenix's light rail served about 200,000 during the five-day All-Star Game events.
We ramped up service to have additional three-car trains out there to be able to take care of MLB All-Star demand.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of your KVNX traffic, once again brought to you by Preparation H. Couple things to share with you folks. Look for an injury accident northbound I-17 at Bethany Home Road. Also, we have an injury collision Guadalupe Road. That is east of the 101. New Preparation H totables, discreet little tubes packed with big relief. They're the Anywhere Preparation H from the brand doctors recommend by name among leading brands. Here is a look at your Wednesday afternoon forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. It looks like most of the thunderstorm activity will stay east of the valley and in southeast Arizona the next 2 to 3 evenings. We could get some gusty winds in the evening hours, but that's about it. Daytime highs 107 to 110. We pick things up again this weekend. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently, we are at 108 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
The world is full of perfect pairs. Peanut butter and jelly, yin and yang, jeans and a t-shirt, and now home and auto from Farmers Insurance. Buy them together and receive a great discount on both policies. Ask a Farmers agent about our perfect pair discounts. Two of dozens of discounts that could save you hundreds of dollars. Get world-class savings and the service to match.
Get to know a Farmers agent. Call 800-FARMERS or visit farmers.com because ready feels good.
Discounts apply to selected coverages, perils, and policy types only and may vary by eligibility.
811, know what's below. 811.
What is he going on about? That song is driving me crazy.
Today at school, one of his friends told him about Call Before You Dig. You know, 811.
Right. Utility lines can be buried in yards, under streets, alleys, even beneath vacant land. It's dangerous and possibly very expensive to hit one of those lines. Calling 811 gets your utility lines marked for free.
811, know what's below. 811, know what's below.
You're starting to sound like him.
811, know what's below. Brother.
Your safety is our priority. At Southwest.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchek.
It's Wednesday, July 20th, and you're listening to Legalese. I'm Jack Willinchek. Your regular host, Dennis Willinchek, is on vacation. The topic for today is the Arizona campaign finance law that was struck down a couple weeks ago by the U.S. Supreme Court. We have on the show today Todd Lang, the director of Arizona's Clean Elections Commission, as well as Nick Trinias, who handled the case on the behalf of the Goldwater Institute. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start by giving our listeners a little bit of background on clean elections law. I'll go to you, Mr. Lang. Can you explain what the Arizona Clean Elections Act did?
Well, back in 1998, after ASCAM and a series of other scandals, the voters of Arizona, this wasn't passed by the legislature, the voters of Arizona, through initiative, passed the law designed to get the influence of big money and the appearance of corruption out of politics and allow average folks to run and allow more people to participate. And that's what the law does. It allows folks to participate who don't have access to insider money or who choose not to use it, and allows them to run for either legislative office or statewide office, so long as they demonstrate a certain level of support and abide by our rules, the most important of which is that they don't take PAC money or spend personal wealth, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, my first question to you is, in light of the Supreme Court ruling, is this the end of clean elections?
No. In fact, we got a sneak preview of how clean elections will work without matching funds. The ruling struck down matching funds, which is the portion of the law that gives additional money to candidates if needed. Basically, the folks who wrote the law decided they determined how much money they thought candidates needed, and then they only gave them a third of that. And the rest, the other two-thirds, was to be awarded through matching funds,
right,
either because their opponent spent more than them or because they got hit with attack ads and the like, independent expenditures. What the lawsuit did, what Nick's lawsuit did, was it struck down the matching funds portion of the law. So now you only get that initial allotment, either, you know, for the primary and the general, but you don't get matching funds. And in 2010, the Supreme Court had issued an injunction, so we didn't have matching funds in that race. And what we saw was that participating candidates could still compete, still get their message out. Now, the voters got less information. There were no responses to misleading attack ads because we couldn't award matching funds. So the system didn't work as well as was intended, but participating candidates were able to win and sometimes beat much better funded traditional candidates. So the program still works. We just won't have two-thirds participation like we have in the past. It'll probably be somewhere like it was in 2010, just under 50%.
Right. Well, we'll go straight to the U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Mr. Genias, let me ask you, the name of the U.S. Supreme Court case was Arizona Free Enterprise Club's Freedom Club PAC versus Bennett. That's some name, by the way. Mr. Genias, can you explain why the court struck down the matching funds provision?
Well, it's very simple. And despite the mythology that Todd Lang so well describes, the reality is that the Clean Elections campaign was a product of a bunch of special interests, mostly progressives, and they barely won the ballot initiative. It was something like just over 50% versus just over 49% in the vote. And the reason for that is very simple. If you call something Clean Elections, who's going to vote against it except people who really do the research? Unfortunately, that was a close vote. Anyway, what the Supreme Court did was it said when the government tries to manipulate elections in the way that the so-called clean election system does, it's very dangerous, and it undermines, in essence, the check and balance of elections. And what the court saw is that on the matching funds component, whenever somebody spends money above a spending limit set by the government, and that then triggers a dollar to match you to each of your opponents, that actually suppresses speech. Because if you think about it in a common sense way, if you're going to spend money to project your message to the public and you're facing three opponents and you know that every dollar you spend over a spending limit the government sets will trigger an equal dollar each of your opponents. So if you spend $1,000, $3,000, if you face three opponents, will be spent against you. The natural and rational response most candidates will have is to curtail their spending or to change the timing of their spending so that the subsidies the government gives to his opposition will not be as effective. And what that tends to do is diminish and suppress speech, change when people do it. People wait until the last minute of the game to play these, to spend their money and project their message. And as a result, in an election, when the public is in most need of free and robust and unfettered speech, they get less of it. And the court saw that for what it is. It is a chilling effect. It is an indirect form of censorship. And even worse than that, it advantages government-funded candidates because Clean Elections money doesn't come from, you know, the monetary. It comes from taxpayers, and it's coming from the government. So the system basically gave an advantage to government-funded candidates over citizens-funded candidates, voluntarily supported candidates versus coercively supported candidates. And that's very dangerous in an election system that's supposed to be checking and balancing government.
Okay. Mr. Lang, how do you respond to that?
Well, obviously, I don't view it that way. Nick's a good advocate for his position. But you know, the purpose of the law is to simply allow more people to participate, and that's what it did. The source of the funding is a surcharge on fines and penalties, and one of the shames of all this is that there's a repeal pending. And the folks who are behind the repeal don't even mention the term clean elections. And they try to imply that it's taxpayer money, like, in other words, it's coming out of the general fund at the expense of schools and health care and the like. But clean elections actually provides more money to the general fund than it gets in tax, you know, in a tax checkoff. So that's misleading. But ultimately, you know, what was interesting about the case was the trial court and the Court of Appeals both found really no indication of real harm to the plaintiffs. The Supreme Court noted that there were a couple affidavits from a couple of the plaintiffs indicating that they did what Nick described, which was hold back on spending money because they didn't want to trigger matching funds. But even some of the plaintiffs acknowledged that, matching funds played no role in their decision. And certainly the trial court and the Court of Appeals found no harm. Basically what they're saying is, as a matter of political strategy, I'm not going to engage in speech because I don't want my, opponent to get a response. It's an odd twist on the First Amendment because, you know, the First Amendment's designed to protect debate and designed to stop the government from infringing on our freedom of speech. But now, with the Supreme Court's ruling, they've changed freedom of speech to now freedom from rebuttal. Not only do we have freedom of speech, but now, even if now we're somehow harmed because our opponent gets to speak, you know, which is a fundamental concept behind the First Amendment. The idea, we're going to debate these issues. We're going to hear both sides of the story. If there's a nasty, misleading attack ad, the voters will get more information. And to find that this somehow infringes on the First Amendment is a real stunner. Clean elections results in more speech, not less. And so it's disappointing. But ultimately, I think what the court did was, of course, it agreed with Nick. And I think what the 5-4 majority decided was that any sort of even hypothetical infringement on speech, in the idea that, you know, Mr. McComish and others might refrain from engaging in speech, even if it's not even if it's only a hypothetical harm, it's enough that we're going to strike it down. We don't want any sort of even hypothetical harm to occur.
Right. Well, you know, that was my first response to this ruling is that, and I saw it, I think, in Justice Sotomayor's dissent. The first thing that comes to my mind is how in court, if you file a lawsuit, the other side is given by law the right to respond. You know, if you file any kind of motion, the other side gets the right to respond. At least in the context of the courts, the fact that the other side gets the right to respond isn't regarded as discouraging you from filing a lawsuit or filing a motion. Mr. Genias, how do you respond to that argument?
Well, it's easy. I mean, imagine if every dollar you spent on your attorney led to the government giving a dollar to your opposition. I mean,
well, in a way it does. In a way it does, because
the purpose of the
government
First
pays
Amendment
for courts
is to enable freedom, first and foremost, and freedom from the government manipulating the marketplace of ideas. And when the government is paying to your opposition subsidies to counteract every dollar you spend over a spending limit, that is something that suppresses speech. No rational person is going to behave the same way with unfettered abandon in projecting their message, knowing that the government is going to give their opposition subsidies. So the fact that the government is injecting itself into this competition of ideas and giving money to the opposition makes all the difference. And that's the problem with the way that Todd and frankly you see the world, is that you don't see a difference between when somebody spends their own money voluntarily to project their ideas and when the government gives money to oppose specific people who dare to spend money over a certain spending limit. The problem with your analysis is that to you, the government's behavior in the marketplace of ideas is to be overlooked. But that's not what the founders intended. The founders intended for a free and open marketplace of ideas between people competing with no government thumb on the scale.
Well, just going back to my, you know, analogy with the courts, I mean, in a way, the government's paying for the other side to have their say there, too. The taxpayers are paying for the judge to be there. They're paying for the court to be there. They're paying for legal clerks to read whatever the other side writes. I mean, the government has to be involved. It's an election. I guess that's where the whole argument that was made in this case fails for me. I mean,
hold on a second. If you're serious about that, how is it comparable, the fact that the government provides the infrastructure of a court system, to where the government is paying money to your opponent?
It's providing the infrastructure of an election.
Think about it. If you're going to spend money on an attorney to draft a pleading, knowing that the government is going to give the opposite attorney the same amount of money to draft a pleading against you, you can't tell me that that wouldn't chill the normal litigation practices of any reasonable attorney. Of course it would. No attorney would behave the same way if the government wasn't involved, and that's the whole point. The government is not supposed to be involved in this competition of ideas. It's supposed to be the umpire. It's supposed to provide the infrastructure. It's supposed to get out of the way. It's not just sit there sort of from Mount Olympus, decide who has an advantage that's unfair and who doesn't, and how can I level this playing field in favor of one guy or another. That's not the role of the government that the founders intended. That's the role of the government that Todd Lang prefers.
All right. Well, we're going to come back in right after the break. We're talking about the Clean Elections Law here on Legalese. This is Jack Wilczek on KFNX.
It's All Business, the second Thursday of every month at the Home and Design Idea Center in Scottsdale. Raven Events hosts another great business-to-business mixer from 6 to 9 p.m. Just $10 at the door gets you admission, appetizers, two cocktails, and a night full of effective business connections. Communicate and collaborate the second Thursday at Raven's B2B Networking Mixer, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Home and Design Idea Center in Scottsdale. For details, visit ravenevents.com. It's All Business. That's ravenevents.com.
I have the answer. Call me for this link and you will call me back. I have the answer. Who was the dynamic leader that history tells us that when he went to meet his maker, that his eyes were not dim nor his vigor abated? I have the answer. I urge you, choose science and not celebrities in your pursuit of an active lifestyle well beyond statistical predictions. I have the answer. Is your energy level low and your health insurance costs high? I have the answer. Tired of buying grocery store produce from third world countries that have been sprayed with who knows what? I have the answer. I have nutrient dense, locally grown produce, and so much more. It costs a few bucks, but it's worth $1 million. Charisma culture is our name, and applying gifts is our game. I have the answer. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601.
Many people facing foreclosure believe they're on a one-way street.
Please take next exit.
There is no exit.
I'm giving you the right directions to help you prevent foreclosure.
Okay, talking to my GPS.
You need expert advice from a HUD-approved housing counselor, and it's free.
Wow.
Please exit this road you've been on for far too long.
Facing foreclosure? Get the right directions from a HUD-approved housing counselor. Visit www.hud.gov/fairhousing.
A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
The Lou Dobbs Show, returning this country to the American people, 1 hour at a time. Monday through Friday starting at 5, right here on KFNX. And streaming live at 1100KFNX.com.
Welcome back to Legalese on KFNX. I'm your host for today, Jack Willinchek. Our topic is the Arizona Clean Elections Law, which was struck down a couple weeks back by the U.S. Supreme Court. We have on the show today, parts of it where it was struck down. We have on the show today Todd Lang, the director of Arizona's Clean Elections Commission, as well as Nick Trinias, who handled the case in the Supreme Court on behalf of the Goldwater Institute. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the court's reasoning in this case. I know that the court specifically rejected the idea that this law was somehow helping to prevent corruption. Mr. Danias, I've seen that you pointed out that nearly half of the legislators who are accused of taking illegal contributions from the Fiesta Bowl actually run for office on clean elections. Would you agree the court specifically found that this law does nothing to prevent corruption?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that what the court recognized is that if you assume that corrupt politicians are somewhat rational in their corruption and that they don't want to get caught, in a system like Arizona's where all campaign finance contributions are, you know, vigorously disclosed, the last place in the world you're going to put a bribe is in your campaign. Instead, you're going to take bribes that have nothing to do with your campaign. You'll get a junket to the Super Bowl. You might go out on a nice vacation to Hawaii. All that kind of bribery, it doesn't make a difference whether you're taking money from the clean election system or whether you're taking money from citizens. You're still going to be equally susceptible. And so I think that's the basic point Chief Justice Roberts recognized, is that in the context of a system like Arizona's with robust campaign disclosure requirements and low contribution limits, they're just, you know, bribery is irrelevant. Corruption in the sense of quid pro quo corruption is really irrelevant to campaign finance, and especially irrelevant to public finance.
Mr. Lang, I take you disagree with Justice Roberts' finding that this law would have done nothing to prevent corruption.
The law itself is designed to reduce the appearance of corruption. Sort of the debate between the parties was whether the matching funds provision did that as well. And what we argued was that it was a necessary part of the law because it encouraged incumbents to participate in the system and therefore reduce that appearance of corruption that comes from taking all that insider money. And what the plaintiffs argued was that basically, no, this particular provision itself has to stand or fall on an anti-corruption interest. It can't be linked to the rest of the law. And it, Chief Justice Roberts, you know, agreed with them. But, you know, when you look at the Fiestable contribution list, it's a 12-page list, and it's far less than half of the folks listed in there ran as clean elections candidates. And I'd also point out that what the candidates did in the Fiestable situation was nothing wrong. They accepted contribution. The illegal part was the reimbursement by the Fiestable to the donors. That was the corrupting part. And what it shows is that low levels of contributions, Arizona's low contribution limits, are working because they wanted to get curry favor and get undue influence, and they knew that the low limits weren't going to let them do it, so they tried to work it around by having people give and then reimbursing them. So effectively what the Fiestable could do was give much more than it was permitted to do under law, and that was what was allegedly illegal about that whole fiasco. You know, going back to the point Nick raised about, you know, the marketplace of ideas, I can't agree with him. I couldn't agree with him more about we want a robust marketplace of ideas, and that's what the framers were shooting for, and that's what the framers wanted. And I think that's what clean elections does, because it allows more people to participate. The idea of the marketplace of ideas as an exclusive country club available only to the rich or the powerful or the insider is contrary to the whole point of what the framers were doing. Remember, back in 1787, when they were debating the convention, it was about the merit of ideas, not who had the most money, not who had the most power who participated in that convention. We didn't have mass communication back then. Well, now there's a barrier to entry. If you don't have money, you don't really get to participate in the market. You don't get to get your message out to the voters, and that's what Clean Elections was designed to do, allow more people to get their message out to the voters. You know, we hear criticisms of Clean Elections that folks who aren't viable can run. Well, you know, I think the best way to determine who should represent us is by letting the voters to decide by voting, not by who can raise the most money with the Chamber of Commerce. And the folks who want to get rid of clean elections are really saying we'd rather have the chamber or the parties decide and not the voters. Clean elections allows the voters to decide because it allows more people to run.
Right. Mr.
Deans? You know, I got to respond to that. Look, yeah, the reality is with the Internet, people can raise money in small increments from tens of thousands, millions of people outside, inside your district, all over the place. All kinds of people can run with citizens' funding. There's no longer any arguable need for government funding, if there ever was even in 1998. It's simply a myth to say that there's going to be less participation in our electoral system. The technology is now available for everyone to run who wants to run, who has a modicum of the base that you need to run to be a responsible candidate. Look, the only thing that subsidies generate are substandard products, whether it's politicians or anything else. That's exactly what Clean Elections tends to do. It subsidizes people who are not viable candidates, or it gives free money to protect incumbents from competition.
I don't know if you can speak on behalf of the Goldwater Institute, Mr. Deneas, but the remaining parts of this law, is there any plan? Does the Goldwater Institute have any beef with the parts that remain?
We certainly do. The question is resources. There are limits to what we can do in this world. The one thing I will say, though, is what's really troubling to us is that the Clean Elections Commission is now injecting itself in attempting to rebuff the effort to repeal its existence. It's they're spending money to try to persuade people not to vote for the ballot measure to repeal clean elections. And this just goes to show how dangerous it is when you give government any sort of ability to inject itself in the very processes that are supposed to check and balance government. It is the tendency of government to try to manipulate that process to benefit itself. And so I have to say that one of the things that we're going to look very, very closely at is the fact that the Clean Elections Commission is spending gobs of money and planning to spend gobs of money opposing the ballot measure to repeal all taxpayer-funded elections. And that's something that we do not think would stand if brought up in court.
Mr. Lang, do you want to respond to that?
Well, it's an interesting sort of contrast. They claim, you know, the Goldwater folks are clearly passionate about what they're doing, but they claim to be protecting free speech, and yet they seem to want to silence everyone. They want to be the only one out there telling us what to think and what to do. The commission, the Clean Elections Commission, has an educational mission required by under our statutes. We're required to educate the voters and spend money doing it. Mm-hmm. And we do that, and we've been doing it since 1998, and we aren't going to change that if this proposed repeal goes to the ballot. It's not, you know, it's right now there's some litigation pending. But assuming it goes to the ballot, we are not going to participate in that referendum. We're not going to spend any money on that referendum. We're going to do our usual education plan regarding how clean elections works and how you can get involved. And we're happy to work with the Goldwater folks on, you know, on on the education plan. Now, obviously, they can't write it for us, but we're happy to work with them and to address their concerns. But the bottom line is we have an educational mission we're required to do by statute, and we have no interest and no plan to participate in the repeal in any shape or form.
Right.
Well, you know, the funny thing to me is that the statute says you can only spend about 10% on your so-called education plans, and as our understanding, you're pushing 20%. And, you know, many people who advocate campaign finance laws are try to define electioneering in the broadest possible terms to limit, at least in the past, to limit what private people could spend. Well, you know, the reality is if you're spending millions of dollars potentially, at least hundreds of thousands of dollars, trying to portray the clean election system in a good light during an off-cycle year when the only issue pending before the voters is whether or not clean election should continue, that looks a lot like electioneering to me. And there's some inherent danger when the government engages in electioneering to protect its own existence. That is something that goes far beyond just talking and just engaging in speech. That's called government manipulating a check and balance on its own existence.
Well, if I could respond, I mean, it's an odd thing. We're not even in an election year. And if this is on the ballot, it'll be in November of 2012. We have a long way to go. Our education plan was designed and put together, again, it's been going on for 10 years now, before there was any repeal on the ballot. And to suggest that somehow this plan that was already in place has anything to do with the repeal effort, it's just simply incorrect. And as for the 10% limit, I mean, Nick knows the argument there. There is a 10% limit that the commission has to go by, and that's a different limit that has to do with administrative spending, and the language is different, and it's clearly a limit. This 10% is not a limit. It's a floor. Obviously, why would the committee, why would the folks who drafted the law want to limit our education
program? All right.
Program?
We got to wrap up. We got to go to our break. I want to thank our guests for today, Mr. Nick Trinius from the Goldwater Institute and Mr. Todd Lang from Arizona's Clean Elections Commission. When we come back from break, we'll be talking about the new Arizona medical marijuana laws.
For your organization or business to survive in these challenging times, you'll need cutting-edge information. The Keylight Company is a psychological business consultation firm. Keylight offers executive coaching, organizational development, seminars, ghostwriting services, and public speaking. Mention KFNX and receive a 20% discount. For business consultation, call the Keylight Company today, 323-935-5775. That's 323-935-5775.
CNN Radio, I'm Jim Ribble. The Homeland Security Department has issued a new bulletin advising state and local law enforcement around the country to look out for possible terrorist threats against private utilities. Meanwhile, the TSA is rolling out new software which will eliminate the actual images of passengers and body scanners at airports. The agency says the software will auto-detect items that could pose a potential threat. TSA Administrator John Pistol says, on top of taking some of the controversy away by using generic asexual figures, this new software also is able to detect more hazards.
This technology, of course, gives us the best opportunity to detect the non-metallic devices, the bombs that we saw, for example, on Christmas Day 2009.
He's referring to the notorious underwear bomber. Seven Atlanta educators have stepped down after being issued an ultimatum to quit or be fired. They were among 178 Atlanta public school employees accused of being involved in a widespread standardized test cheating scandal. Wall Street today, all the indexes down. The Dow lost 16 points. This is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio, thunderstorms causing some flooding problems in southern Arizona near Miller Canyon. Also concerns about the Wallow Fire area in eastern Arizona.
We have a flash flood warning out for basically portions of the Wallow Burn area from about Alpine through Nutrio. So
supporters of increased border security can help Arizona build its own border fence, a new website up and running, buildthefence.com.
Frankly, we have to pick up and do the job that the federal government has not and will not do. And that's why we had to start this.
Phoenix police looking for suspects. 78-year-old man found dead in a city park.
To have a person like this, a 78-year-old man in our community, to think that he could be killed in a park at night is just unacceptable.
Phoenix's light rail served about 200,000 during the five-day All-Star Game events.
We ramped up service to have additional three-car trains out there to be able to take care of MLB All-Star demand.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This Jack of Your KFNX Traffic once again brought to you by Preparation H. Traveling eastbound on the I-10, you're going to find some slowing at 83rd Avenue all the way in. Also, look for an accident northbound I-17 at Bethany Home Road. And you're going to have some slowing because of the D-backs and the Brewers at 7th Street in Washington. New Preparation H Totables, discreet little tubes packed with big relief. They're the anywhere Preparation H. Here's your Wednesday afternoon forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. It looks like most of the thunderstorm activity will stay east of the valley and in southeast Arizona the next 2 to 3 evenings. We could get some gusty winds in the evening hours, but that's about it. Daytime highs 107 to 110. We pick things up again this weekend. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently we're at 109 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100. I'm Chet Reynolds. You're up to date.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, host of Healthline. Join me live to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Healthline, the world's leader in cell-resonant nutrition technology, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works. This month, Max Stress V is on special, delivering near-instant energy boosting from its live source, high-energy, N-chain forms of B vitamins. Feel the difference. Increased energy, better mood, less sleep need, and more stamina. Even folic acid is in the N-chain form, ready to use by the cell. Max Stress V, our best seller. Nothing else even comes close. Buy two bottles and get the third one free. Call 800-370-3447. That's 800-370-3447. Experience nutrition that really works.
Healthline with Dr. Bob Marshall every Saturday at 9 a.m. here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
This is Starshine Academy School's E-Star Radio, brought to you by Macy's, a socially responsible company making a difference by giving back to our communities. Starshine Academy International Schools are kindergarten through 12th grade, charter schools that stand for the American dream, world peace, and what our students' responsibilities are for making the world a better place. Starshine is based on high academic achievement, self-realization, self-discipline, and humanitarian service. Please consider supporting StarshineAcademy.org.
Coming up this week on The Kevin Trudeau Show.
I'm Kevin Trudeau, The Kevin Trudeau Show, everything they don't want you to know about. This week, I have headlines you don't hear about in the mainstream media. Plus, natural cures for better health and ways to have, be, or do everything and anything you ever will desire. Improve your physical, financial, and mental health today, The Kevin Trudeau Show.
Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. on News Talk Radio 1100, KFNX.
Welcome back to Legalese on KFNX. I'm Jack Wilinchek, your host for today. Your regular host, Dennis Wilinchek, is on vacation. For the rest of the show, we'll be talking about Arizona's medical marijuana laws. There's been some recent developments that are making people start to question whether or not the government is going to crack down, is going to prosecute people who have licenses under the law. I have in the studio here Alan Sobel, who's something of an expert on the medical marijuana laws. Welcome to the studio, Alan.
Jack, thanks for having me here today. I'm in the business of helping people get their license.
That's a tough business right now, isn't it?
Yeah, very convoluted at the moment, yes. A lot of confusion out in the marketplace.
Right. I understand that the governor, who's opposed to the law, filed a lawsuit back in May, essentially asking for the court to strike it down. I know the attorney general is also a party in that lawsuit, and just this last week, the county attorney also joined in the lawsuit. You're involved with that lawsuit as well.
Yes. I'm the director of the Arizona Association of Dispensary Professionals. We're the largest marijuana trade association in the state. We have about 9,000 members. And as soon as we heard about the governor's petition, we contacted the attorney general's office and asked them to voluntarily add us on as a defendant. I know they thought we were crazy to do that, but we felt that was the only way we can aggressively and actively address the issues, and that's what they did. They added us on as a defendant, and we did file recently a motion to dismiss the case, which I'll be glad to share with you.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us. Hey.
Well, you know, I got to tell you first up that when I woke up this morning, I was still in America. And in America, it's all
like
about
the way it starts.
Yeah, it's all about we the people. You know, it's about government by the people, for the people, all that stuff we learned in school. Well, I think that the government should be spending more time in trying to find an effective way for people to get the medicine they voted for rather than coming up with these convoluted schemes to try and thwart the will of the voters. Well, this is no longer, in my opinion, it's no longer about marijuana. whether you're pro or con marijuana doesn't make a difference. This is about government abuse. And the Voters' Rights Act specifically precludes the governor from doing what she's trying to do. And, in fact, what she has done by going to the federal government is to try and get the federal government to do what she cannot do, which is to stop the Medical Marijuana Act from being implemented. So the governor files this petition, and in her petition she alleges she's concerned about the safety of state employees.
Right.
She thinks they're going to be prosecuted by the federal government if they issue licenses. And that just can't be further from the truth. There's never in the history of the United States been a state employee that's been prosecuted for issuing a license to anybody, whether it's contrary to federal law or not. And more importantly, the specifics of the lawsuit, if you read the last line of the governor's action, it specifically is asking whether the law is legal or not, whether Arizona can implement the law. So it's not about protecting state employees. It's her effort to try and stop the program from taking effect. In our motion to dismiss the case, and I should tell you that while we initiated the action, we were the first ones to do that, we've had a lot of support from the industry. Since we did that, the ACLU has joined in with us. Normal has been assisting us. A lot of other industry members, even the Rose Law Group, has joined in with us. So we now have an industry unity with respect to doing this, which is very important. But one of the first and foremost reasons why I believe that we have a meritorious request is that in any civil action, as you know, you're an attorney, that you got to show damages. And where's the damages here? Who's been hurt by this? Right now, there's no employees that are being threatened. Even U.S. Attorney Burke, who wrote the letter to the governor that instigated this whole action, admits that he never threatened state employees. He never said anybody was going to be prosecuted other than people that are distributing it or cultivating it. I don't see where the governor can claim there's any damages. And on that basis alone, the case should probably be thrown out. Additionally, we don't believe that the federal government, the federal courts, rather, have any jurisdiction. You cannot use, there's a lot of case precedent to support this, you cannot use the federal courts to nullify a state law. She would have been better off filing it in state Supreme Court, or state Superior Court, rather, or even go to the appellate division, but for some reason they chose federal courts, and, that's not the place to argue this case. And so for that reason, again, we believe it's going to be thrown out. Further, she raises the issue of the Controlled Substance Act, and she says that under the Controlled Substance Act that they can't do this. Well, that's just not true. There is a provision in the Federal Controlled Substance Act that does give immunity to state employees who are acting under the authority of their
really?
Position.
Okay.
And additionally, there's also in the Controlled Substance Act, there is a provision that allows states to modify the act slightly to comply with state laws. So the governor does have the authority to work around the system if she so chose to do so.
Okay. Well, the law aside, the big question is whether the Obama administration is going to do anything to prosecute people under this law. I know there's a few things that have happened in the past few weeks that have made people start to question just where the president stands. First of all, late last week, the Drug Enforcement Administration released a statement saying that marijuana has no accepted medical use. Maybe you can explain that a little
bit. Yeah, sure thing. First, just if I go back 1 second, regress for a minute, I also want to point out the hypocrisy of the governor's statements. Her petition is asking the federal government to intervene in state rights, whereas with the SB 1070, the immigration law, she's suing the government to get them out of involvement in state rights. So I think there's a real hypocrisy that needs to be addressed.
Okay.
But with respect to the federal government, yeah, even if the program is reinstated at this juncture, we still have some issues with the federal government. There was an original memorandum that was issued by Mr. Ogden, who is the head of the U.S. Justice Department, and he clearly stated back a couple years ago, right after Obama was voted into office, that he would not pursue patients or caregivers or people that are obviously in need of medical marijuana, that he was going to focus his attention and priority and resources on those that were cultivating and just with the intent to distribute were the three important words. There's been some recent raids by the federal government, and the government's position has always been, we're going to prosecute people if we find out that you're in violation of state and federal law. You got to have the combination of both. So there have been a number of raids that raised a lot of questions, and there were some letters written to the federal government asking for clarification. And recently there was a clarification written by Deputy Cole, who, again, Deputy of the Justice Department, and he basically reiterated his position that we're not going to spend valuable federal resources, limited resources, on going after individual patients, people in wheelchairs, but we are most definitely going to pursue people that have large cultivations and distribution networks and who are selling marijuana. And to me, that sounds like a dispensary.
Right.
So those that are interested in getting a license for a dispensary need to be be a little nervous about that.
Right.
We don't know where the federal government's going with that. And because of that, yeah, there are some problems. But specifically, to answer your question, the DA did come out and make a statement that they don't believe there's any medicinal value for marijuana. And that was based on a lawsuit that was filed against the Obama administration a couple of years ago, essentially asking the Obama administration to lower the substance level for marijuana because they believe that there is now evidence to show there is medicinal value. Marijuana is listed in the Substance 1, and that means that there's no medicinal value for it under the Federal Controlled Substance Act. But they're saying there are now 16 states that have enacted medical marijuana laws solely on the basis that there is medicinal value for it.
Right.
And there's a number of medical reports and studies that have been done by some pretty major medical associations that came out in support of it. So now that the DEA has come out and filed their formal opposition, it's actually a good thing for us. At this point, they can now appeal that decision and take it to the United States Supreme Court and show that there are these 16 states plus 11 more that are entertaining it. And we believe there's a real good chance that the marijuana will be reduced from Substance 1 to something lower. And that'll basically get the feds off the back of each individual state.
Right. Well, there have been some other signs, too, that the president might have some kind of intent to prosecute, you're saying, dispensaries, if not individual users. I think last Monday, the White House released the National Drug Control Strategy Report, saying that marijuana use has been at its highest in 8 years. It went out of its way. The report went out of its way to say that marijuana should not be legalized, calling it addictive and unsafe. We'll talk a little bit more about this after we get back from the break, but we should probably get to the heart of this issue. A lot of the unease, definitely on behalf of people like the Attorney General and the County Attorney, is that these licenses will be abused, that people will turn the marijuana over to the private market. We'll address some of those issues right if we get back from the break. This is Jack Wilinchek on Legalese on KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Are you paying more than you have to for your home loan? Discover how to take advantage of the lowest interest rates in decades and put money back in your pocket every month. eLoan Choice has been authorized to offer new mortgage rates that are starting a new refi boom. Rates are at all-time lows, and that means lower interest and lower payments for you. Lock in your low rate for 30 years before rates go up again. You never know when waiting, even one day, could cost you thousands in interest payments. For a free rate quote to refinance or for first-time homebuyers, call eLoan Choice now. Call 800-917-3794. 800-917-3794. Our friendly professionals will help you find the loan that's the best fit for you to save the maximum amount of money possible and discover just how little you could be paying for your home. Rates may never be this low again in your lifetime, so don't miss out. Call 800-917-3794. Call 800-917-3794. 800-917-3794.
Arizona sports fans, this is Andy Dorf, host of Dorf on Sports, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10 p.m. on KFNX Radio for my good friends, azcasino.com. Get dialed in with the online leader since 1997. That's GoTo Entertainment's azcasino.com. Call 888-333-PLAY now and mention Dorf on Sports for a $25 free play, a 25% cash bonus. That's 888-333-PLAY. That's GoTo Entertainment's azcasino.com. Any wager, any sport, anytime, azcasino.com.
For news and weather every half hour around the clock, set your center button to 1100 a.m. and lock it in. KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Welcome back to Legalese. This is Jack Wilinchek. Your regular host, Dennis Wilinchek, is on vacation. Today we're talking about the medical marijuana laws. There have been some recent developments that made people question just whether the president is going to enforce the law, whether anybody's going to get prosecuted. We're talking to Alan Sobel here in the studio. One of the things I want to ask you about, just before we went to the break, we were saying that the concern that a lot of government agencies have with this, it's not really with whether or not they're going to get prosecuted for any involvement with dispensaries. It's really that, you know, people are going to abuse this. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, I'll be the first to admit that early on when Prop 203 was first proposed, I had some skepticism myself. I was a little concerned that maybe, you know, college kids would be trying to sneak in and get their cards and become a recreational program like what happened in California. But recently in our club, we've had some clinicals where we have a doctor there. People come in to qualify. And I got to say, my heart goes out. I've seen people come in with one arm and no legs and wheelchair and serious disfiguration and debilitating diseases. I wouldn't question not one of them whether they're really suffering or not. And it's very sad. I mean, I don't actually know. I can't tell you for sure that marijuana actually helps these people, but they believe it does. And I don't believe the government has any right telling somebody that they can't take something that really alleviates their pain. And there's a lot of, you know, medical studies that have substantiated the fact that marijuana does have medicinal benefits, like with glaucoma. It takes the pressure out of your eyes. And, you know, with a cancer patient, it helps you avoid the nausea effect from the chemotherapy. So there's clearly a medicinal value, and there are people out there that are seriously suffering. And I think it's cruel and unusual treatment to deny somebody something that they feel helps them.
Well, licenses have been granted, personal use licenses, to around 7,570 people. That seems to me to be a big number, but you were telling me off the air earlier that's actually kind of a small number.
No, it's very disappointing so far. I think a lot of people are afraid because of the controversy and all the questions in the air. I think a lot of people are afraid that the program is going to be stopped entirely. They'll get their cards revoked, and the police will know who they are. So they're very reluctant to come forward and apply for the cards. The health department had estimated back in November there might be as many as 100,000 people that will sign up for the cards. And that's typical, you may find in other states, about 2 or 3% of the population. So at the rate, we're getting about 1,000 a week, a little less than 1,000 a week. At that rate, it'll be less than half of what we anticipated for the first year. So that is somewhat disappointing to us.
Right. Well, under the law, you're allowed to grow your own marijuana if you don't live within 25 miles of a dispensary. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. As long as you're less than 25 miles away, or more than 25 miles away from the dispensary, you can grow
your
own.
And you have a card, of course.
Yeah, you have to meet the qualifications, have a debilitating disease that's covered under the law, and you have to live more than 25 miles away from the dispensary, and you can grow your own. However, right now,
there are
no dispensaries. So everybody has a card, can grow their own right now.
Right. You were telling me earlier that there's a special situation with the caregiver cards too. They can grow even more.
Right. If you're a patient and you don't have the time or the desire or ability or know-how or perhaps not even the money to grow, it's very expensive to grow marijuana. You can appoint a caregiver. A caregiver can have up to 5 patients, plus himself if he's qualified, which means a caregiver can grow up to 72 plants. That's 12 plants times 6 people, 72 plants each. That's a lot of plants. That's a lot of marijuana.
Right.
So a lot of these caregivers have a lot of excess marijuana. They give some to their patients, and they still have pounds left over. And we've developed a network for caregivers to provide these products, to this medication, to other people that can't afford to buy it or can't afford to grow it. And we worked out a network where it can be distributed through these new cannabis clubs that are opening up all over the place. My organization was the first to open up a cannabis club in Arizona. It's called the 2811 Club. It's a great facility. It's actually an educational resource facility. We provide all kinds of educational resources and networking resources for patients. And at the same time, they get free samples of the marijuana that's distributed by this caregiver network.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. If we've got so many people, especially if the dispensaries never open up, you've got that many people who are growing marijuana at home, how can you possibly control all that? How can you make sure that doesn't fall into hands it shouldn't?
Right. That was one of the fears of the health department. That's why they, as my understanding, they really tried to implement the dispensary program.
Right.
Because now it's kind of a helter-skelter. You do have people growing, your neighbor could be growing next door to you. You don't know about that. And the bigger fear is if they stopped issuing the medical marijuana cards under Prop 203, anybody with just a doctor's recommendation can legally carry the 2.5 ounces with them.
Hmm.
So it would be even worse if they stopped the entire program.
Right.
The only way to avoid that would be to, you know, nullify or actually repeal Prop 203 in its entirety, which I'm not sure that's going to ever happen.
Right. That's kind of a funny position for enforcement agencies to be in, it seems to me. In a way, they want those dispensaries to be there because that way it's controlled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think whether it's a dispensary or some sort of legal entity that or legal system that can provide a safe, dignified, legal way for these patients to get the medicine they voted for.
Right.
Otherwise, if you eliminate all those venues, you're basically pushing the patients back to the black market.
Right.
And that's something the police don't want to have.
I saw a statement by John Walters, who was director for the, I think, the Bush administration of the National Drug Control Policy. He was quoted as saying that medical marijuana dispensaries are, quote, getting the marijuana from some of the same criminal mafias in Mexico that are killing people daily, end quote. How do you respond to that?
There's no doubt in my mind that there are entities out there that are probably purchasing some of this marijuana from the black market. The goal and purpose of our organization has always been to take the marijuana business industry out of the black market and bring it into mainstream America. And to do that, we have to have a professional organization. We have to have a credible industry, and we have to train people to be professional business people. By stopping the dispensary program, you're essentially stopping that, and you're pushing it back into the marketplace. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're creating the very thing that you're threatening will happen, and that's unfortunate. I think most patients out there want to have a safe and dignified way and a legal way to obtain the medicine, and that's why they're coming to these cannabis clubs at this point. So all we can do is hope that the government will wake up and realize that marijuana is here to stay, people need it, and they're going to get it one way or the other. So we'd rather do it in a legal way rather than go through the black market.
You know, the thing my mind keeps going back to is the fact that this has been, medical marijuana has been legal in California for a while. Can you tell us more about the situation in California?
The laws in California are entirely different than what we had here
okay.
in Arizona. It was it started off as just a patient program where patients can grow, and it just got out of hand so quickly. There's so much controversy, so many problems. As you know, Arizona, California tried to actually legalize it a few last year,
right.
which didn't go through too well. But it became a recreational program very quickly. There was no regulation over the program. There was no regulation over the doctors. So you have an industry of pot docs that developed, and you go in with a wink of the eye. You give the guy $50. He gives you a recommendation, and that's all you needed. There was no other qualifying license. You didn't have to go to the health department there and get a qualifying license. The dispensaries, all you had to do was open up these cannabis clubs with no regulation whatsoever.
Right.
So it very quickly turned into a recreational market, got out of control, and you can't put that genie back in the bottle anymore. It's not going to happen.
Right. You're saying the Arizona law is different. Here we have a licensing system.
Right. Arizona's law was designed to be a model for the rest of the country. It was very heavily regulated. It was a control way for dispensaries to cultivate and distribute the marijuana to qualified patients. There was a strict qualifying process for dispensary owners. It had to go through background checks and a lot of regulation. And if it would have started up, and we would have had a great model for every other state to follow. Most states were looking at us to see how this would turn out. But again, the government is interfering in the will of the voters here, and they're not mm-hmm. allowing that program to go through. And in effect, they're creating the problem that they envision would happen.
Well, you mentioned to me again off the air that there is a repeal effort.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know about this, but this Prop 203 can be repealed after 2 years. So if anybody wants to get an initiative on the ballot, then it can happen. So my position is I think the governor is intentionally trying to do that. She's trying to delay the program, hoping the market will become helter-skelter and create all kinds of criminal matters that the police will have to enforce, become public record, so she can stand on her soapbox and say, 2 years now, look what happened, Arizona. We warned you this was going to happen. Well, she created it. She made it happen by eliminating the dispensary program. And then hopefully she can get it put back on the ballot. And as you know, we only won this by a slim majority.
Mm-hmm.
It was a majority nevertheless, but it was a slim majority. And it probably wouldn't take much to scare the people back the other way and eliminate Prop 203 entirely.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of businesses, not businesses, storefronts, I guess, popping up. They look like medical dispensaries, of course. The dispensaries can't operate currently under the law.
That's right.
But they're still leasing space, and
right.
you're still seeing them around.
Yeah, under the application process, which was kind of convoluted in itself, you had to actually rent a store before you can apply for your license. You had to have a physical location and go through some zoning issues with it. So a lot of people rented stores. Some of them put some signs up just
right.
to say coming soon, and they had their signs up there. Primarily, those stores are all empty. You cannot have a legal dispensary in Arizona right now. What you also might be seeing is a lot of clinics.
Hmm.
Where you have doctors, you go in, you get your recommendations, and then you're probably going to be seeing signs like in the 2811 club where people opening up cannabis clubs. There's no regulation for a cannabis club. So anybody can open one up tomorrow morning if they want to and operate their business. You may see some of those signs popping up as well.
Right. Were there any other new developments with the medical marijuana law that you
I think the most current is with the cannabis clubs. They just popped up all of a sudden.
Right.
I want to caution your listeners that some of them are they may call themselves cannabis clubs, but they're really black market. They're selling marijuana. You go and you make a dollar donation, then you go and buy all the marijuana you want. Yeah. That's criminal. You get involved in that, you're subjecting yourself to prosecution.
Right. All right. Thank you so much, Alan, for coming on the show. That was Alan Sobel, an expert of sorts on the medical marijuana law. This is Jack Wilinchek on KFNX. We'll see you next Wednesday at 4.
Many people facing foreclosure believe they're on a one-way street.
Please take next exit.
There is no exit.
I'm giving you the right directions to help you prevent foreclosure.
Okay. Talking to my GPS.
You need expert advice from a HUD-approved housing counselor, and it's free.
Wow.
Please exit this road you've been on for far too long.
Facing foreclosure? Get the right directions from a HUD-approved housing counselor. Visit www.hud.gov/fairhousing.
A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
I have the answer. Call me for this link and you will call me back. I have the answer. Who was the dynamic leader that history tells us that when he went to meet his maker, that his eyes were not dim nor his vigor abated? I have the answer. I urge you, choose science and not celebrities in your pursuit of an active lifestyle well beyond statistical predictions. I have the answer. Is your energy level low and your health insurance costs high? I have the answer. Tired of buying grocery store produce from third world countries that have been sprayed with who knows what? I have the answer. I have nutrient dense, locally grown produce, and so much more. It costs a few bucks, but it's worth $1 million. Charisma culture is our name, and applying gifts is our game. I have the answer. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, host of Healthline. Join me live to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Healthline, the world's leader in cell-resonant nutrition technology, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works. This month, Max Stress B is on special, delivering near-instant energy boosting from its live source, high-energy, N-chain forms of B vitamins. Feel the difference, increased energy, better mood, less sleep need, and more stamina. Even folic acid is in the N-chain form, ready to use by the cell. Max Stress B, our best seller. Nothing else even comes close. Buy two bottles and get the third one free. Call 800-370-3447. That's 800-370-3447. Experience nutrition that really works.
Healthline with Dr. Bob Marshall every Saturday at 9 a.m. here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, Cave Creek, Phoenix, the home of Lou Dobbs, weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. It's 5 o'clock.